Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Picture this now. You finally got your copy written, at least your first draft. Now what? So that's what a subscriber on YouTube asked me a few weeks ago. And the best I can do to answer that question is to tell you how I look at copy, whether it's my own or a client's. Today's show is about a series of steps I go through to review the copy with a mentoring client or on a one-off copy critique. And some of these steps may be familiar, but listen for the parts that aren't. Adding those parts to your routine could end up taking your finished copy to the next level. Meanwhile, I'm going to stick to my routine by telling you that copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear in this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. Okay, we got a lot to cover, so I'm going to jump right in, and I'm going to put these in the order that I look at them. We've got 14 items to cover in less than half an hour, so here we go. First, four important things to look for first. And the first one is, who is the prospect, who's not, and how would you know if you tripped over them? So I'll give you an example, and this is in my own business as a coach and a mentor. My prospects for coaching, they are copywriters who are already working and making some good money in direct response, and they are business owners who understand, accept, and use direct response copy. Who are they not? Freelance and staff writers who write something other than direct response copy. Maybe they write branding copy. Maybe they write blog posts. Maybe they write white papers. That's not my market. It's also not business owners who need to be convinced that direct response copy is good and could work for their business and want to hire me to argue with. No. So you need to know who your prospects are and who they're not. And it's amazing how many people skip this step or best come up with a fuzzy definition for their prospects, but getting sharply focused makes it a lot easier for the next step, which is number two, empathy. I always look to see, does the copy show that the copywriter or the offer owner understands the prospect, how the prospect looks at the world, how they feel, what their life is like? Empathy is a skill that can be learned. Like many others, it's easier for some people than for others, but learning how to insert empathy in your copy in a way that comes across as natural and authentic sometimes takes some practice. But if your prospect reading your copy does not feel understood, you've got a long uphill battle ahead to make the sale.
I want to say copy seems to be overwhelmingly guys, but the girls, the female copywriters that shine, that's one thing that I see consistently they do better than the guys is the empathy thing.
Yeah, I think women intuitively understand empathy. And for a lot of guys, you know, we're competitive and we, you know, we love to rib each other. And sometimes it seems a little soft or weak to be empathetic. It's harder. But yeah, I've noticed that too. You're absolutely right. All right, number three, the rule of one, the golden thread. I look to see, does the copy have a theme, one idea, one main benefit, and or one pain to solve, one thing to focus on? Copy that meanders usually isn't interesting and often doesn't sell. Now, sometimes this means making hard choices. The word decide comes from two Latin words, which mean to cut off, to pick one idea, one pain, one benefit as the theme of your copy means you'll have to discard the others. You'll have to cut them off. Now, sometimes you can make other ones a branch of your main one, and that can work, but you need to stay on the same path. For example, if your golden thread is getting rid of joint pain, you could talk about pain in the ankles, pain in the elbows, pain in the knees. Ankles, elbows, and knees are all joints. You could talk about the mechanism in the supplement that helps relieve joint pain. But you wouldn't want to go off on a side trip to talk about getting rid of headaches or those annoying sounds that your car makes before it warms up. Don't do that. Stay on track. Yeah, you have any thought about the rule of one, the golden thread? I know we've talked about that a little.
Yep, we have two episodes way back at the beginning of the podcast where we dive deep into this. And this one is very important, but it's not very easy to pull off. It's one of those ones that I think takes years of experience sometimes to be able to get consistently down.
Yeah, and it also may take some trial and error, which is more frustrating when you're new at this and just more matter of fact when you've been doing it for a while, where you might try one, you might develop it out, say, no, that's not strong enough, and then you need to go back to the drawing board, back to square one. But man, does it make a difference. Okay, the fourth thing I look for is continuity and smooth transitions. Mm-hmm. So you want to read this out loud, your copy, and sometimes you'll find there's an abrupt shift from one part to another. Man, that doesn't work. It might work as a cool trick in a movie where you cut from one scene to other abruptly. But even in movies, there are usually a lot of transitions. And in copy, there certainly should be. A couple ways to help this. One could be an analogy or a metaphor, which will help you move from one point to another. And Nathan, I don't know if you remember this because it was like 5 years ago, but you shared six phrases that you use. In this case, I think it was particularly transitioning from a story into the close, but this could really work anywhere in your copy. These phrases could. The reason I bring this up is, therefore, here's why this should matter for you. I'm telling this to you because, now suppose you were doing the same thing. And so, just as in the case of... Mm-hmm.
I will say, there is an episode where we dive deep on this as well. And one of the things that I really like about this is when you have that abrupt change from section to section of your sales copy, a lot of times it feels like a road bump or it feels like a rough patch. And it can take people out. It can make people say, wait, what are we talking about now? And every time they do that is a potential for them to not finish reading your copy. So learning how to do these smooth transitions make it a lot more likely people will easily read from one section to the next and get all the way to the end of your piece.
Yeah. Even if they don't abandon the copy, it slows down the momentum that, mm-hmm. that you were building up. So always good to have transitions. So okay, so that covers the four things up front. Then there are like five particular parts of the copy that I look at. And if you're editing copy, you should look at. And the first one is your headline. And this is the most important part of your copy. Now, I did want to say that headline, not everything has a headline. So essentially, what functions as a headline? What's the first sentence if it's a script or maybe a social media post with no headline? It's the most important part of your copy, whether we're talking about a headline on a sales page, opening a line in a YouTube video, or the first line of a Google ad. People who have measured this say that your headline is responsible for 80% of whether the copy will work or not. So what do I look for? First, is it interesting? Will it get attention? Second, does it speak directly to your prospect in a way that will engage that person? And third, is it easy to grasp without having to read through it carefully, maybe more than once, to figure out what it means? The important thing is the before-after test. Before is, does it speak to something that was on the prospect's mind before they saw the headline? after is, does the copy follow, does the copy that follows fulfill the promise made in the headline? The afterwards, does it close the loop that it opens or continue to open that loop further? And I'll tell you, Nathan, even among my most advanced, successful clients, I still see this mistake in the headline. They talk about one thing in the headline and they open a can of worms, but they never resolve it. And that's a major thing to fix when you're editing copy.
Mm. Especially in today's world where we're bombarded with clips and reels and 50 social media posts every second of scrolling, having a powerful headline that grabs your attention and stops the scroll is so important. I think when the rule, the 80-20 rule first came out, that was before we had social media, before we had all of the different platforms out there. And now the attention competition is so much greater that this is even more important than it's ever been.
Yeah, it is. It is. And yeah, this came out in the print days. I mean, this came out in the 50s, in the 60s originally. I mean, this is not new, but human psychology in this way has not changed. So the second piece to look at is the opening. And what I'm about to tell you is not a new idea. I've seen it in different advertising books by different authors, like the 80% rule. This is decades old, but people seem to miss it all the time. And that is, does the opening, does the first sentence or the first paragraph follow directly from the headline and expand upon it emotionally? Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about apples in the headline and you start talking about hurricanes in your opening, that's not really very good copy. If you're talking about apples in the headline, then you should start talking about apples. You might want to transition to talking about apple trees or fruit or a metaphor about apples or something. Mm-hmm. But if your headline is talking about something to the reader, then don't abruptly change the subject in your lead and first paragraph.
Yeah, it's very similar to the transitions rule. If the copy, the headline doesn't flow seamlessly into the opening, you're going to have that thing right at the beginning of your sales letter where they're like, wait, what does this have to do with the headline that I just read?
Yeah, a question you do not want to have your prospect ask. Okay, third thing I look at is proof. And this is also a huge missing piece I see in copy ranging from beginners to advanced copywriters. The way I look at it and the way you should look at it is simple. What's in your copy that's important for the prospect to accept as true or even likely to be true as a claim and it's not an established fact? Whenever it's a claim, you need to have the proof to back it up. And proof comes in many forms. Testimonials, case studies, statistics, track record, origin story, mechanism. And it's more than just logical proof. Think about a prosecutor in a courtroom trying to convince a skeptical jury that someone's guilty. What kind of evidence do they present? The answer, of course, is anything they can get their hands on that they are legally allowed to use in the trial to get the job done. And it's the same idea here. If you leave enough reasonable doubt wafting in your copy or out of your copy, you haven't done a good enough job with the proof. So if that's the case, fix it.
Yeah, and I would just add, especially if you're dealing with a sophisticated or skeptical market, this matters infinitely more, the more sophisticated the market is.
Yeah, the more sophisticated the market, the usually better critical thinkers they are, and thus they're going to be skeptical of stuff that seems a little outside of their experience or, you know, a little hyped up. Mm-hmm. Okay, so fourth thing I look at is the offer. And if there's one thing that sinks otherwise decent copy every single time, it's lack of a good offer. I like to think of an offer as the most appealing description of what you're selling, along with the key emotional benefits that come from owning it, combined with any bonuses. You know a good offer when you see it, often because you don't say that's a good offer, but because you reach for your credit card and hit the buy button. I've heard for a long time that people who get deep into testing this stuff say, you can sell things if you have a good offer, but so-so copy. But if you have a weak offer and otherwise great copy, chances are you won't make any sales at all. And the offer is just that important.
I would say this one almost belongs at the very beginning of the episode, because that's been my experience as well. Any client that I take on that already has a good offer, even subpar copy will still soar. But if they don't have a good offer, all the persuasion tactics in the world won't work a lot of the time. So the offer is very important.
Yeah, I would say that's true. The reason I didn't put it at the top is you can't really have a good offer if you don't have those other things in place first. In other words, to create a good offer, you need to know who's your prospect. You need to have some empathy. You probably need to have a golden thread. And anyway, continuity, and you don't need that for a good offer. But yeah, I see your point. And yeah, I'll take it. You're right. It's just that important. Mm-hmm. All right. The fifth thing I look at is the call to action. And we've talked about this a lot, right? It's amazing how many people seem to run out of steam right before they write their call to action. You need something strong, simple, clear, and confident. Nothing vague or confusing or wishy-washy. For this and the other four critical elements, headline, opening, proof, and offer, it might be a really good idea to do one of two things. One, work them out in advance before you start writing your copy, or two, rest for at least 24 hours after you've written your copy and before you start reviewing. Now, this may come as a shock to many readers, but your mind is sharper after you've rested than after you've been writing copy nonstop and, you know, mainlining coffee for 12 hours.
I feel personally attacked.
Yes, but enlightened. Okay, so this goes beyond editing, but it's so important I'm going to include it here. Make sure you check every step of the process, of the buy process, after the call to action to make sure it's clear what to do and that it works. These things screw up sometimes. It may not technically be your responsibility as a copywriter, but if you're being measured by results and someone else has accidentally made it physically impossible or extremely difficult for anyone else to deliver those results by buying something, you'll get your share of the blame for the low numbers, whether it's technically your fault or not. So make sure prospects have every opportunity to buy.
One thing that I'm going to ask your opinion about this. I know for me, copy is my favorite way to sell, and it's because I'm a little bit of an introvert. I don't like network marketing. I don't like door-to-door selling. I don't like, I'm a little bit hesitant of the fear of rejection. And so asking for that sale in general is just a lot easier in copy, but it is something that made me favor copy because I had that fear of rejection. And I think that for a lot of copywriters, that might come up. I see when it does come time to ask for the sale, that fear of rejection might show itself in weasel words like, this might be for you, or you might want to check this out. And so I think that copywriters are a little bit more prone to this just because of the style of selling that we're naturally drawn to. I want to get your take on that.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. It's probably true that if you're reluctant to ask for the order or to close in real life, it's going to be hard to do it in writing. I do think a lot of people are drawn to copywriting because they are more introverted and they don't want to be out there talking to people all the time, shaking hands, going to meetings. You know, they don't always have the kind of thick skin you need to accept a lot of rejections without being affected emotionally. But no matter how introverted you are or how uncomfortable you start out initially about asking people for their money, you need to find a way to become comfortable with it.
Yep.
Or you know, the best copy in the world is not going to work. You need to decide that it's okay to ask people for their money if you have something that's a good fit for them and, you know, is an honest representation of that thing.
And just one last thing, that strong, confident call to action instills confidence in the prospect at the point where they need it the most, when they're about to make that buying decision. That's when you need to be the strongest. That's when you need to be the most confident. That's when you need to be the most bold. And so that's why the call to action, having it be a confident, strong call to action, is so important.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, as a copywriter, you might think, well, you know, I got all these other things right, so even if I screw this up. But people don't read that way. They're not sitting there with, you know, an abacus saying, hey, how do you do in this one? How do you do? They're saying, they're sort of like looking at how they're feeling in that particular moment. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be a cumulative effect of everything else you've written, but ultimately they're going to respond based on what they just read.
Yep.
All right. So those are the pieces I look at. Now, this next part is how a lot of people edit. They don't even bother with the first two. That's a mistake, especially with copy, especially when you're trying to get a result. But this third section is also important. It's called getting the words right. And again, this may be where people start, but that is a mistake. You've got to get the big picture stuff right first, zeroing in on the prospect, the golden thread, the voice, the transitions, and you got to get the elements right, the headline, the opening, the proof, the offer, the call to action. Those pieces are going to make you or break you. And there are a number of things that will make your copy easier and more enjoyable to read, which is what we're going to talk about. But there's no point in having readable copy if it's not going to convert. And that's what the things we've been talking about up till now are all about. But let's say you've gotten them out of the way, or your copy has passed those tests. Now it's time to focus on getting the words right so that the maximum number of people will read it, enjoy it, and read easily. Okay, so five parts of this. First, use simple, easy-to-understand words. If you come from a corporate, technical, licensed professional, or academic background, this could be a challenge for you. You might be used to using big words because they make you sound more professional. And maybe they do make you sound more professional when you use them. But the thing is, outside of your office, people don't buy from you almost all the time when you sound that way. Instead, they buy when they understand quickly, they believe you, and they feel like they want what you're offering. And the thing is, while they might believe you if you use big words, they definitely won't understand quickly enough to get the right series of emotional reactions unless they use all the same big words you do as second nature. Even then, though, the chances are good that the big words will keep them from experiencing what you're writing if you're writing cerebrally. They won't get the feeling they need to have of what you're offering. So many copywriters know about using short words and keeping things to understand. Sometimes business owners, especially ones that come from a corporate, technical, or academic background, aren't as used to this idea. But it's very important, and you need to find anything that's hard to understand in your copy and make it easy to understand by changing out the words.
This is another thing, kind of like the bumpy transitions. This is another thing where if they have to stop and think about what a word means, or did you use the right word, or I've got to go look on dictionary.com to see what he's talking about, that's another chance for them to leave your copy and never come back.
Yeah, great point. I mean, that's the reason, exactly. Okay, the second thing to look at is variety in sentence length, variety in paragraph length, and bold facing. Mm-hmm. So you don't want any of your sentences to be too long, of course. And when you have more than one idea or too many actions in a sentence, that makes the sentence hard to read. But is the solution to have uniformly short sentences? Not exactly. That can get monotonous and come across as brusque, robotic, uninspired, and uninspiring. So you want to have some variety in the sentence length and in the paragraph length. You still want to keep everything relatively short, no more than 3 sentences per paragraph. And of course, it's okay to have some paragraphs that are only 1 sentence long. The other thing to look for when you're reviewing copy is the visual dullness of a gray page covered with type, even if there is variety in the sentence length and the paragraph length. And you can fix that with bolding, either by inserting bold subheads every 3 to 6 paragraphs, or, like something I suggested to a client earlier this week, boldface the lead sentence of every 3rd or 4th paragraph. You only want to choose sentences that have some attention-getting power before you apply the boldface to them.
This is one of those things, too, that just at a glance, if it is, you mentioned the gray page, if it's just a wall of text and there's no variation, it looks very boring to read. I'm not going to jump into that. But if it looks like there's cadence and flow to it, like a roller coaster where there's an up point and then a down point and then varying smaller up points and then a big up point again, that makes it exciting to read. And it makes it even exciting to look at, which draws you in to read it in the first place.
Yeah, really good point. I never thought of it that way, but basically you're talking about a dramatic arc or you know, the flow of music. It's, yeah, yep. Very good. Yeah. All right. 3rd thing, the Flesch Kincaid grade level. So one way to check on how you did with your words and your sentences is to run a readability check. And the best free one I found online is a site called readabilityformulas.com. I think the best one, they have a lot of formulas, but I think the best one to use is the Flesch Kincaid grade level. This estimates the level of education in the U.S. a person needs to have completed to understand what you've written. And the lower this number is, the better. You might think your prospects are very educated and intelligent, but you need to sell at a simpler level than the level you believe they think and talk at. I would say 7th grade is the highest level you want your copy to be, and I've seen successful promotions to educated, sophisticated adults with money as low as 5th and even 4th grade reading levels. Mm-hmm. If your number is too high, the easiest solution is to make your paragraph shorter, your sentences shorter, and use fewer words of more than 1 and 2 syllables. And we'll include the URL for readability formulas in the show notes.
The only thing that I have to add to that is if I'm reading a sentence, you mentioned shorten your sentences up, break them apart into multiple sentences. If I'm reading a sentence and I get to the end of the sentence and I can't remember what I was reading at the beginning of the sentence, you've failed as a copywriter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Stamp that. Yeah. Underline that for sure. All right. Images, emotions, and physicality of descriptions. So if your copy is too filled with hype and over the top, people won't believe it. But if it's too dry and purely factual, people will get bored and they won't finish reading it and won't end up buying. You need to strike a happy medium. So the use of words that describe images and scenes works a lot better than stuffing your copy with adjectives. Keep your copy close to the ground, not abstract, but more physical in the here and now. That helps as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't have anything to add to that one.
All right. And finally, I look for conversational phrasing and actual dialogue. Write like you talk. Easier said than done, but really important, especially for copy. Sometimes it helps. Yeah. Read copy out loud. If you trip over words, that's a good sign. The copy is not conversational. Also, sometimes it's good to have people in your copy with names talking to each other. That keeps it interesting and helps you get information across in a real life setting.
Dialogue. So Sue said to me, I noticed this. having that in there, just the quotations, it for some reason, it makes it feel more real. It's not just, what do they call it, exposition? Is that what it is when you explain things rather than just let it flow out? Having people, having that dialogue, I can't quite put my finger on it, but I've noticed over and over again, having some dialogue, especially at the beginning of your piece, really draws people in and wants it keeps them wanting to read more.
Well, I don't know either, but I could imagine that it is written that when Sue says something, it's important.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And I think that that was kind of the the golden thread of this episode is all of these are things that you can do that will keep people reading your copy. And that's so important.
Okay. So how about a quick recap?
Let's jump into it.
Okay. So three sections. First section, four important things to look for. One, who is the prospect? Who is not? How would you know if you tripped over them? Two, empathy. Three, rule of one or golden thread. And four, continuity and smooth transitions. Then five elements of copy to look at, see how they're doing. Headline, opening, proof, offer, and call to action. And finally, get the words right. Do you use simple, easy-to-understand words? Variety in sentences, paragraph length, and bolding. Flesh Kincaid grade level. Images, emotions, and physicality of descriptions. And conversational phrasing and actual dialogue.
Man, this was like a masterclass in copy. I don't want to say copy editing, copywriting slash editing, but wow, you delivered on this episode, David.
Well, thank you. We do our best here, right?
Absolutely. Okay, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to get more, we've got almost 400 other episodes, including the ones where we talked about transitions and some of the other topics that we talked about today. We do deep dives into on other episodes. If you want to check those out, get them over at copywriterspodcast.com. And you can find the show notes for this episode over there as well. And anything else before we're out of here?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Until next time, man, we'll catch you later.
Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.